Ben, how are you?
I was telling Katie it's getting a little chillier.
Oh wow, yeah, it is. It is.
You know, it's my walks are getting a little shorter.
It was 46 degrees when I got up today, and my bike ride tonight will be chilly, dark and chilly, but I'm still
going
to go.
Are you planning on going for a bike ride?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we go. All right. Well, that means we need to jump into some cues.
Jump into it.
Let's do this. Guys, if y'all have a question for Doc, go ahead and put in the comments. Where's the heater I got you? It's actually right. It's at my feet, Katie. It's up here. Trust me. I have the heater up here. Getting that thing ready for fall. Okay, let's rock and roll. This is a super fun question. We just put out the Berberine Max supplement from the Dr. Rogers formulas. I just bought Dr. Rogers Berberine Max supplement to help with losing a few pounds. Dosage recommendations and any medication interactions that I should be mindful of. What's your thoughts on this?
I found this dihydroberberine that I like, that's absorbed better. I think it's 200 milligrams, just one pill a day. And I don't think there's any interactions that I can think about. I mean, you wouldn't need to take that plus metformin together. Obviously, if you're on another diabetic medication, which lowers your sugar, you may watch out for that. For example, if you're taking glimepiride or any of the sulfonylureas, or especially, hopefully you're not taking those, but if you're on insulin or Jardiance, Januvia, any of those that lower your blood sugar, you could, you know, because berberine is going to lower your blood sugar some, so you'd have to watch out for that, but you're probably not on any of those, I would assume. So, but the routine stuff, no, I just don't see any problem with it. I like that form. Seems to be better, absorbed and less GI upset than some of them. So,
and I'm going to put this up here from Katie here, up to 2 daily. Thank you for putting that in there, Katie. All right, we're going to keep rocking and rolling. Great question there. I just take one.
I think it works great. And, you know, if you're a diabetic, you may want to take 2, but one is usually pretty good.
All righty. Thank you so much for sending that question over email. This is another one that came on email. On last week's podcast with Randy Martin, I heard you all mention a supplement good for collagen. Did you say silica or silicone? It was silica. I remember this part of the episode.
Yeah, I think Randy did talk about that. You know, silica, which you could take along with your collagen supplement, works pretty well for being complementary to that. Silica is just a trace element. Collagen is more of a protein matrix, is how I look at it. So actually, if you use silica, it kind of makes the collagen be a little bit stronger and more flexible. So a lot of people will add it, you know, either orally, I think it's around 10 milligrams, 7 to 10, something like that. You're not going to overdose on it. Add that to your collagen as well, your collagen supplement, which I like keto collagen the best. And they kind of work synergistically for your skin, your joints, your nails, your hair. It just makes the collagen work a little bit better.
Is there a brand you like for silica? Out of curiosity.
No, I think Randy at Harlan carries a brand of it. I'm not sure. I don't have a lot of. It's just a trace mineral, so it's not going to have to be that fancy or expensive.
And Bianca in the comments is saying, is it a powder or a pill?
They make it into facial creams, but I think the one Randy has, I'm pretty sure it's a pill.
Okay.
Don't hold me to that, but
and we'll find out more information on that, because that is interesting. Collagen's a very popular topic here on the show, so we'll figure out what what Randy likes as far as pill versus powder. Seems you're talking about cream for the face as well. All right, let's keep it going, guys. Let's see here. This is a common question. What causes sinus infections? Seems like there's been an increase in my area lately. I want to know the answer to this question.
Well, generally, it starts out with a virus, like a cold, or allergies. Those are the two typical things that will start it out. And what, say you get a cold, an infection is when something, when I say infection, I usually think of bacterial infection. So usually if it starts out as an allergy, but you get all this congestion, and when water kind of pools and stands around, it gets infected. Look at a pond water, what happens to it? So if things are stuck, say you have a sinus blockage, you get all that inflammation in your nose, and it blocks down these maxillary or frontal sinuses, or even deeper, your ethmoid sinuses, then it doesn't have anywhere to drain out, and it gets bacterial superinfection on top of it, and sometimes even fungal infections in your nose. So same thing with a virus. You may have a cold. If it sticks around too long, or you don't dry it up a little bit or drain it, then it can become infected. And usually when you get an infection, you're blowing thick mucus out, maybe green, yellow. You may get tender in your sinuses. When you lean your head over, you feel a pressure behind your face. That usually means that a cold or an allergy has turned into a sinus infection. I'm a big believer in sinus rinses. The Navage is what I like to use. But a lot of people's sinuses are chronically inflamed from allergies and prone infection. So if you get a lot of sinus infections, it's usually has an allergic etiology to it that turns into infection. But I mean, around this area in Tennessee, we see it every day. I mean, you know, and this is the time of year when we're really seeing an increase in them.
Thank you so much for that question. That the sinus infection, when I get them, you can always feel it a little heavy in your face. Okay, this is a follow-up question here. Are there natural alternatives to antibiotics?
Yeah, there are. You know, a lot of people, when they get a sinus infection, will, you know, start spraying colloidal silver up their nose. I certainly think that's probably the best one that I know. Zinc is good. It's almost like a natural antibiotic. I think vitamin D, when you pop your vitamin D up to really high, anytime you get a cold, a sore throat, start popping 50,000 of D for about 5 days. And you can even take a vitamin C hourly until you start to feel better while you're awake, and it will help. Vitamin C is great for that. Zinc, of course, nasal sprays. You know, we keep a lot of Cofix, which is basically betadine. Iodine is another alternative that you spray up your nose and down your throat. That's great to have to start out on if you're coming down with a cold. And there's a lot of other things. I think it's oscillium is a good one. There's a lot of essential oils that are alternatives to antibiotics. So there's a ton of them.
We did a podcast with Jeff Thomas, a good friend of ours who worked at Life Extension for a long time. And he mentioned to me that taking vitamin C, I think it was like 1,000 of vitamin C every hour, like you just said, for 24 hours. And I've never tried it. That seems pretty intense to me, but like, that's a great alternative, you know?
That's not intense at all. I mean, gosh, that's a low dose of vitamin C, believe me. think of how much Izzy just came up. I mean, gosh, we give, you know, when you consider how much vitamin C we give IV, like say you take a gram of vitamin C orally, only 20% of it gets into the cells. When we give it IV, 100% of it gets into the cells. And sometimes we'll go up to 100,000 milligrams, you know, over a 4-hour period. Then we infuse for serious things. But so taking a gram of C an hour is nothing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So quercetin, I love quercetin. You know, I love NAC for your immune system. Those are two that are really good.
All right. Thank you so much for that question. We're going to keep going here. We're going to go to a couple of hormone questions. This first one here is, can having low thyroid or hormone issues cause you to lose bone in the teeth?
Yeah, it certainly can. Hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism can cause a lot of gum damage. A lot of times, you know, your oral cavity is almost like a window into your body, really. I mean, a lot of times you get some manifestations in your teeth and gums that will signal that something else is going wrong systemically. And thyroid is a major one. It certainly can cause hypothyroidism and hyperthyroidism. Graves' disease can, or overdosing on somebody too much on levothyroxine can cause bone loss and also can cause decayed teeth, gum disease. So certainly, I know a lot of dentists that have sent me patients just because they thought they had low thyroid based on their teeth. So certainly it can. And there's some evidence that levothyroxine can even cause damage itself on your gums. That's one reason I prefer Armour or NP. Plus 90% of my patients feel better on those forms of thyroid. Mm. You know, they've been around for 100 years, desiccated pig thyroid. This seems to work a lot better than Synthroid or levothyroxine in most of my patients. You know, you have a combination of T3 and T4 and really all T1, T2, all of them. And hormone, of course, thyroid's a hormone, but other hormones, of course, I mean, low estrogen is going to cause bone loss and therefore, you know, degrading of your teeth as well. So, you know, loss of calcium. So great question. Great point, really. It certainly can.
It's funny. You know, we've been doing the show a while and I we haven't gotten that question in regards to hormones. So, yeah. That's a really interesting question and something that I'm glad that we were able to touch on today. So thank you for sending.
Yeah, see your dentist, see what he thinks about your the state of your teeth.
All right, so we're gonna. This is a really interesting question. We're gonna go back. Last week we talked a little bit about, you know, I'm calling it here affordable bioidentical hormone replacement. You know, different ways to make it more affordable and. One, I'm just so thankful for questions like these because, you know, I think, you know, a lot of times it can be assumed that it's unaffordable and in some cases it can get expensive. So we like to have these conversations and one, I'm going to give you some specifics here, Doc, with different pricing and guys who are with us live, ladies, if you guys have any suggestions, anything that you guys are doing, if you're on hormones that, is more affordable than maybe going a specific route, please put in the comments because that's going to help more people than you know. One of our missions here is to you know, educate around this stuff and make it more accessible for more people. So I'm going to kind of read this question here, and it's going to give some specifics around monthly costs and and Doc, I'm just going to ask for kind of your thoughts. And then, you know, if anyone in the comments, you know, has anything that they can, that's helpful, you can put in the comments. Okay, so here it goes. If compounded hormones were only $40 a month, yes, they would be affordable. However, compounded Biest is $37.95. Compounded progesterone at 100 milligrams is $105 per month. And local estriol is $37.95 per month. That's not affordable, and they are unpredictable due to the natural variance that is inherent to compounded drugs. Each month brings new side effects and symptoms because no 2 months are the same. For those of us with self-pay insurance, the cost of an insurance premium plus the hormones exceeds $1,000 a month. So it'd be nice to be able to use insurance for HRT at the pharmacy. If we have insurance, we can't be prescribed FDA-approved options like patches, estriol local creams, or other options. So it seems that it doesn't matter if they're BHRT. So it doesn't have to be bioidentical. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you definitely want it bioidentical. But, yeah, you know, I don't know where they live, but around here you can get a bioidentical hormone cream from anywhere from $30 to $50. It has it all in it, estradiol, progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA. The average cost, I think, is around $40. You need to call around and find out. But around here, that's about the price of it. Now, if you start splitting it up into just biased and then separate progesterone capsules and then an estriol vaginal cream, it is going to cost you a lot. So I prefer to compound them all in one cream. That's the most affordable way to do it. You know, and again, there can be some variance, you know, between pharmacies, and they should be have the same thing in them every month. But, you know, we like to use people that have been doing this for years and years and years.
So you mean with the compounders?
Labs with the compounders. But yeah, you need to check around the different compounders and make sure. Now, if you do start splitting it up, you know, it does get a lot more expensive. So my preference is to use them or cycling them on and off. So I know some people use progesterone the last half of the cycle and all, but for most women that are postmenopausal, then they just do the cream with, you know, with everything in one cream. And that's the price around here. If you live in a different part of the country, you know, maybe call up here to some of the ones up here and maybe they can mail them to you. But the option, you know, insurance is expensive for sure. There's no doubt about it. And that's yeah. expensive. You're paying $1,000 a month for your premium.
Well, it seems that's that really plus the hormones is over $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so look at getting a compounded cream with everything in it, you know, for pretty affordable price and try to not to split them. Now you can use, you know, there are bioidentical hormones that are available commercially. For example, an estradiol patch, you know, your insurance may cover it. You just check with them for sure. And then if you do that, you could use an oral progesterone, which is the only oral hormone I use, maybe besides DHEA, but you can get an oral bioidentical progesterone called Prometrium, you know, at any pharmacy, CVS, whatever. So you might try that if your insurance will cover it. So that is a bioidentical form of progesterone. It's micronized progesterone, not medroxyprogesterone, which you totally want to avoid. So, you know, try the combinations. And if it's still in your area, just unbelievably expensive, and you don't want to, you know, combine them into one cream, then you could try getting the estradiol patch and oral Prometrium. And then you could even, you know, testosterone is a different matter. You're probably not going to get that for women too much at most pharmacies. But I think that is, you know, a good part of what you need is a woman. You still need testosterone. So you may be able to get by with just a, you know, one thing in women, you can pop your T level up by just some DHEA. As a woman, I probably wouldn't go over 15 milligram of it. Put a lady on that today to pop her T up. She didn't want testosterone. So I just put her on, told her to go get some 15 milligrams of DHEA. So there seems like there are some affordable options with this, but it's certainly, you know, if you can use your insurance on anything, and some of the compounders may be able to even file your insurance on the creams, you might check with them. I've heard of them doing this, but for around here, the creams with everything, just I think the average is around $40.
That was so helpful. And I'm so thankful for questions like that, because, you know, it allows us to dive a bit deeper and get really, really contextual. And
that's a great question.
It is.
And it brings up a great topic because, you know, there's not a lot of transparency with things, especially when you're using insurance. I've told the story before, but a couple months ago, a guy came to my office with narcolepsy. He had a severe case of narcolepsy. He'd fall asleep during the day, just talking to you. So I prescribed modafinil, which is generic form of Provigil. Great medicine for that. Works fantastic. And so he goes to CVS and for generic, he calls back and said, I can't afford this. It's $750 a month. And I just couldn't believe it. So I got the pharmacist on, yeah, our generic modafinil, $750. So I told the patient not to get it, that we look on GoodRx. We found it for $35 a month at Food City.
Yeah.
So always check around. You know, if it's unreasonable, don't do it. Check around.
And that's really, you know, one of my ambitions and visions for this show is that we can, you know, through everybody that's with us live, if you're listening on the podcast, you know, give your feedback for what you're seeing. And you know, a lot of these ideas we get from you guys and you guys might know of a price that is beneficial to somebody in here. And even if they're not live, they might be listening a week from now. Okay. So thank you guys for, I'm seeing Roel's putting in here. He's $50 a month for his wife in Texas. Katie's saying a lot of the local pharmacies will offer a discount for 3-month supply. These are really, really helpful tips. There's Lisa right there. Insurance is a racket. I'm going to put this up
it
here
is.
from Caesar here, costplusdrugs.com. I think that's
Mark Cuban.
Yeah. So thank you for putting that in there. I really want this to be a place where we can, you know, bring everybody's, experience together and what you're seeing. And, cause again, you do need to shop around for this sort of thing. And your example with the Food City, patient is evident of that. So thank you for teeing us up with this topic and allowing us to dive a bit deeper. And thank you guys for putting in the comments, you know, things you're seeing and prices that you're getting. And, it's super, super helpful. All right, so we're going to keep rolling. Let's see here. I think that's the last question that we got throughout the week. And if I missed you, I'm kind of got an eye on my email right now as well. So you can let me know there. But we're going to go to the live portion of the show where we answer live questions. So if you have a question for Dr. Rogers, go ahead and put in the comments. We're going to be here till 8 tonight. Let's see where we're at. Evangeline's here. Evangeline, what's up, man? I didn't see. I would have given you a shout out here when you got here. Okay, let's see. I'm sorry. Coal miner's daughter, what's going on? Great to see you. Let's get to Velma. Terry, I see you. What's going on, man? Velma's asking, how do you treat ringworm from the inside out, or do you just treat the rash?
Gosh, if it's just one spot, usually treat it with just an antifungal cream, like Lotrimin, something like that. But if it's more than one place or spreading or that doesn't do it, I use an oral medication to treat it. Sometimes I use nystatin. Sometimes I use Diflucan. But usually if it's pretty minimal, just the Lotrimin cream will work. That's a great question. Should be easily to cure, though. I see it a lot.
All right, Velma, thank you for putting that in. And as we wait on more questions, I'm going to put this up from Katie. Carrots with coconut oil and apple cider vinegar is also a great natural antibiotic. Thank you for that, Katie. And I'm going to put this up from Lisa. Hopefully this helps some people who are on the creams. PA is reasonable. My T3 and T4 is like 69 for 3 months. So that's for thyroid there. Perfect. Thank you for that.
Good.
All right, let's see. I think I'm not seeing questions. If I'm missing anybody, please let me know. and we'll hang out until we get some. We'll look over here on. I don't think I've missed anybody. So if you have a question, go ahead and put it in. If not, we'll make it a shorter show and let Doc get to his bike ride. but for those of you who are new to the show, we do this every single week at 7 o'clock. We answer live questions as well as questions that come throughout the week, either through email or on our social accounts. I'm going to take the time because we got a couple people here that are probably new. I'm going to put this up because I'm going to give a huge shout out to my brother. If you guys have not subscribed to the Diabetes Tour Guide, please do. This is where we talk about all things diabetes. Roel likes it. If Roel likes it, I think you guys are going to like it also. but we're super proud.
He's got that mustache going because he's in a play. Which actually we're going to go see Saturday night.
I'm not going to be there this Saturday, but I'm probably going to catch the last weekend. He's in it with Lucas, who's, let's get Lucas up here. Lucas is the star of this upcoming play over, in Jonesboro at the Jonesboro Repertory Theater. And Andy is, right there beside him, I believe. Let's see here. Stan has a question. Thank you, Stan. If you take testosterone, does this affect blood pressure? They recommend donating blood. Why? Stan, thank you so much for asking this question. This is one of a common question we get in office and a common mistake we see, with hormone replacement. So what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about testosterone. And a lot, most doctors really don't understand it either. You know, they don't look into it. They're not taught about it. But no, it will not raise your blood pressure. Now, the reason that they may recommend blood donations is because testosterone can thicken your blood. So if you get on testosterone, of course, you need to look at your hematocrit, which is the volume of your red blood cells. And in about probably 5% of my patients, it raises it enough to where I tell them to donate some blood. But, you know, you don't need to do it unless it raises your hematocrit. So you don't just automatically go do it unless you want to, which is a great idea if you know, because other people need it. But you really don't need to do it unless it makes your blood thick. And it's not a high percentage, it's some. The other thing we watch out for, of course, is it aromatizing or converting to estradiol? And in that case, sometimes we'll put you on an estrogen blocker, sometimes just zinc and broccoli extract, you know, over the counter. So there's just a lot of misconceptions about testosterone. I think I had somebody today that asked me, their doctor had told them something about it, and it was completely wrong. But, testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. It does not cause heart disease or strokes. It just doesn't do it. It helps everything. Think of your heart as a muscle. Testosterone promotes muscle growth. So it's great for your heart. It's great for your brain. It's great for your bones. It's great for your energy. It's not just for muscle growth or libido. So you need to maintain a good testosterone level as you age. And if you're young, like I saw a guy today in his 20s, and he had very low testosterone. In that case, you have to go find out why. Does he have primary hypogonadism or secondary? Primary is testicular failure. Secondary is the signal from your pituitary is weak. There's different etiologies or causes of both. So you have to know what you're doing when you prescribe hormones. Another thing is you get from the gynecologist, you know, women don't need testosterone. They do need testosterone, just a lot lower dose. You know, that seems to be the one hormone out of all the female hormones that works the best, at least clinically, they'll feel better with that. So there's a lot of misunderstandings about, female hormones and male hormones. Great, of course, a great book to read on testosterone is Testosterone for Life by Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler from Harvard, chief of urology there. He's written many books on it, does a lot of lectures, goes to all the meetings, and read that book and you'll be scared not to take testosterone. And he'll explain why, you know, they, with metastatic prostate cancer, they use testosterone blockers. And they read, if you're as a female, you should read All About Women's Hormones by Dr. Pam Smith. You know, it really is a good summary of, you know, the pros and cons of taking hormone replacement. And if you're a female, start looking early at your hormone levels. I had a lady today, 42 years old. Her estrogen level was really high. She had no progesterone and very little testosterone. And she just felt bad. Wasn't sleeping. Periods were irregular. It's because she has low progesterone. She also had no libido. So, you know, it's in men are simple creatures. Our testosterone just kind of goes down slowly. Women have four hormones that cycle. And so at different times of the month, you get different levels. A lot of times we take into account if you have a 28-day cycle, you know, we like to check your hormones between day 19 and 20, 23. The first day one is first day of your menstrual cycle. But so you have to look at it in that context. And also the fact is that these hormones drop off at different rates. So, you know, the first one to drop off is probably testosterone. The next one's definitely progesterone. The last one to drop off is estrogen. So in those mid 40s, you're probably low on progesterone. And you're not having the overt symptoms of hot flashes, night sweats, and all that you'll get at 50, 51 when your periods stop, and boom, you're in full-blown menopause. Well, by that time, it's not too late, but you should have started earlier. You would save yourself a lot of grief, probably a lot of bone loss, and a lot of sleepless nights by starting progesterone early. It also, you know, lessens the chance of uterine fibroids and fibrocystic breast from that estrogen dominance that you see. And you can really get into the woods. There's different kinds of estrogens. And there's also different metabolisms of estrogens. Sometimes if we want to look into it really closely, we'll do a Dutch test and see how, you know, which pathway that your estrogen is going to be metabolized down, the 2, 4, the 16. And you know, some pathways are safer than others. So, but in general, the thing about most hormones is, you know, you need to be cautious and conservative, you know what you're doing, you know, keep up to date on your mammograms or thermography if you prefer, you know, and that type of thing. Certainly, you know, bioidentical hormones do not cause breast cancer. They lessen your chance of breast cancer. You know, there's a lot of things that came out of the Women's Health Initiative 13, 14 years ago. It was totally misleading. So, you know, you can take a hard look at that if you want to. But, you know, just go to somebody that's knowledgeable about hormones and then make your own decision. You know, in my opinion, it's your decision. We're, as doctors, we're there to inform you of the benefits, risk, and through not only research and study, but experience and seeing patients for years and seeing how they age, how they do. So a little expose on hormone replacement.
No, I love it. And Stan, thank you for putting that in there. And kind of setting the stage there, because we need to educate more on hormones. That's why I'm thankful for all the different types of questions around hormones that are coming in. We got a couple questions that are coming through. I see Evangeline's, Lisa's, Wilma's, Patrice. We're going to get to all you guys. Let's get to Evangeline here on YouTube. What triggers cyst formations? All common types. What's your thoughts on this?
You know, you think about sebaceous cyst. That's usually, most cysts are formed by plugging of a follicle, whether it be a hair follicle or a sebaceous gland. I think a lot of it has to do with poor lymphatic flow. There's a terrible condition that's autoimmune called hidradenitis suppurativa. If you want to look at that, I have a few patients with that. And it's where you get these terrible boils in your axilla and your groin area. It's a bad thing. Sometimes surgeons have to cut out a lot of those cysts. But make sure you can sweat. That's one reason I like an infrared sauna, is so you can open those pores and, get them draining. I like lymphatic massage, dry brushing your skin helps. Massage in general helps. You can get cysts with acne as well, from too much testosterone. You can definitely do that, especially too much dihydrotestosterone. That's why teenagers, when they finally hit puberty, they get that rise in testosterone and they can get cystic acne from it. But there's a lot of other theories about what types of bacteria are in those cysts. They can become infected. But I hope that helps you. A ganglion cyst is one that usually forms on the wrist from some kind of micro trauma to the synovial fluid that surrounds the tendon to provide lubrication for that tendon to move. And that cyst can work its way up towards the skin and form a big cyst on your wrist that usually has to be removed, taken out. But I used to take out all kinds of sebaceous cysts on people's heads, scalps, backs. And most of those, if you didn't get the whole sack, they would come back. So really, I like to take those out when they're not infected. Usually I'll treat them for infection and then take them out when it calms down. But I hope that helps you, if that's what you're talking about.
I hope that helps, Evangeline. Let us know if we were on the mark there. Let's get to Lisa over on Facebook. I mentioned I take 1,200 milligrams of calcium daily, and Dr. Rogers didn't know why I take it, that no one should take daily calcium. But ever since my thyroidectomy and partial parathyroidectomy, my calcium is always low. My lips tingle when it gets really low, so I have to supplement. Is that a bad thing? I take K2 every day with it as well.
No, you need to take calcium.
Okay.
You're one of the rare people who has a parathyroid problem, which regulates your calcium metabolism. But yeah, you need to take the calcium. But most people that are just, I have an issue with people taking extra calcium that don't need it. You need it. But most people, most women, they'll say, well, take 1,200 milligrams of calcium daily to prevent osteoporosis. It's really, not going to prevent osteoporosis. And, if you get too much calcium, you don't want it, because that's what gunks up your arteries, gets in your joints. Again, the D with K, the bioidentical hormones, daily exercise, weight-bearing exercise is what's best for osteoporosis or osteopenia. Read Dr. Lucas's book just came out on common questions about osteoporosis. But no, Lisa, you're one that needs the calcium. Please take that. So but that's a rare thing.
Lisa, thank you so much for giving us context there. I'm so glad that we got to answer that question for you, Lisa. Thank you so much. All right, let's keep going. Wilma on YouTube, if you have a blood disorder, can you use curcumin? If you're taking curcumin, can you still take 81 milligrams aspirin daily?
You can. Definitely curcumin can thin your blood. There's a mosquito in here trying to bite me, Ben, which they attract me. And I did get my mosquito bracelet. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you for my mosquito bracelet. I should have worn it tonight. Cold weather, it'd be all gone. But there's a mosquito flying around my computer in the basement. Usually it's outdoors. But anyway, they really follow me. They really like me. They like my blood. Getting off track. I think I killed it. I'm not sure. But Yeah, so curcumin definitely could thin your blood a little bit, just like fish oil can, vitamin E can. So if you have a bleeding disorder, you bleed too easily, you might want to be cautious with that. And what I do, like, I certainly take an aspirin daily, and I take my aspirin really at night, just because you're more likely to have a cardiac event early in the morning. You want it on board at night, assuming it doesn't upset your stomach, because I don't recommend you eat at night either. But just space it out. Just don't take it right around when you take curcumin or omega-3s. Just separate it by a few hours. But it's a great question. Great question. Curcumin's an awesome thing. I talked to a patient today that was inquiring about use of Fenbend for cancer. And that's one of the things on the protocol, that curcumin and CBD oil, you know, or they help cancer. You know, and look at some of the protocols.
Thank you so much, Wilma, for that question. We're going to go back over to Facebook here. Patrice, oh, very cool. You're going to love Brooke. I'm so excited for you, Patrice. Very excited for my first appointment, performance medicine, tomorrow with Brooke. I'm excited for you, Patrice. I'm interested in your experience with heart electrical problems, PAC, PVC, SVT. Also coming in for hormone balancing.
He's back around.
I thought that was like your action.
No, I'm trying to kill that mosquito. I'm trying to kill that mosquito.
Okay, I appreciate all experience. Thank you. Thank you so much, Patrice. And I know we can help. What's your thoughts for this question, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, you know, those electrical PVCs, usually, you know, they can be bothersome for sure. It just depends on how many of them you have and whether you're symptomatic from them. Certainly PACs and PVCs, premature atrial contractions, premature ventricular contractions, are very common. Everybody has them. Some people have a lot of them. And some people have every other beat PVCs. It's called bigeminy. It's scary, but it's usually, even with that, it's usually not ominous. Now, SVT, if you get in a long run of supraventricular tachycardia, I mean, you can really end up with, you know, having to take something for that or even get an ablation. You know, my wife, Jenny, your mom, Ben, had episodes of SVT that got pretty serious, to the point of syncope, passing out while running. So she had actually two ablations where they go in there, and it's a special type of cardiologist called an electrophysiologist who goes in there and maps out the electrical system of your heart and burns a particular aberrant circuit out, which worked for her the second time. Yeah, I mean, if you have significant problems, I'm sure you've ruled out causes or precipitating factors like too much caffeine, too much stress, problems with your thyroid, problems with your electrolytes, that type of thing. Most of the time when I see it, if it's not caused by stress or too much caffeine, it's more of an inherited thing. And this depends on how severe it is. I'm sure you've probably seen a cardiologist about it and done a Holter monitor and looked at that and to see if it's anything ominous. It usually isn't. You know, sometimes they can even use medications like calcium channel blockers, beta blockers, that type of thing that will calm them down a little bit. But so make sure you follow up with your cardiologist, but don't freak out about it. But get one that has a lot of experience with you know, electrophysiology of the heart. But yeah, I'm glad you're going to see Robin. She's fantastic. Look at your hormones. Brooke tomorrow. Great. Yeah, Brooke's awesome. I thought you were in Knoxville. But wonderful. We're glad to have you. We'll treat you best we know how. And we'll probably end up getting a Cleveland Heart panel on you, which is one of the best things we do. Look at all your hormones, all your thyroid, your adrenals, your insulin resistance, your vitamin levels, all the stuff, the size of your cholesterol particles, your levels of inflammation in your body. You know, all those things need to be addressed. Talk about your gut. All those things are important. And so I'm glad you're coming.
Patrice, we're super excited for you. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Let's go to Mark's question on YouTube. In my area, we are experiencing antibiotic-resistant UTI infections with a shortage of antibiotics. Some are looking to Urel. Is a combination of five medicines, hyoscyamine, methenamine, methylene blue, phenylsilicate, and sodium phosphate. Any thoughts? Mark, I knew you'd do this to me, man.
Mark throws those big words in, so Ben will mess up on the pronunciation of them. But yeah, those are all natural ingredients. Of course, the one we really love is methylene blue, but I'm glad they're putting that in there. And, you know, the salicylates and hyoscyamine, that may calm down the inflammation of the bladder. So you're kind of hitting it from all the aspects. So yeah, I'm all for it. You know, we use a ton of methylene blue.
Well, they're in, as do the
and
dogs.
Our dogs like it too. Our dogs like the methylene blue. You know,
I love it.
But yeah, that Mark, that sounds like a great combination. I haven't seen that particular combo, but wow, I'd love to see how it works out. And maybe if they could do some CNSs of that urine, see what bugs grow out and see if it clears it up. That's awesome.
Thank you for putting that in there, Mark. Let's get to Kim's question. Do you recommend hormone therapy at 60 years of age? I had a total hysterectomy at 43 and have been on been only on estradiol patch since then. What's your thoughts on this?
No, at age 60, you really should be lined up and just shot and put out of your misery. That's what I think. I'm kidding, Kim. You got to throw some humor into this thing. Of course, yeah, I recommend it at age 60. I recommend it at age 90. You know, total hysterectomy at age 43. But, you know, the feelings on it, I really think you need progesterone. I think you need all the hormones. Just because you don't have a uterus doesn't mean you don't still need progesterone. Think about it. I mean, you've always had it. It's very protective of your breast. It helps you sleep. It helps keep weight off. It has about 300 different things that it does. But, you know, and the way I was taught and the way most of the gynecologists are taught is, you know, that progesterone protects your uterus against unopposed estrogen, which it does. But it also has all these functions that protect everything else, especially your breast. So, you need the other things as well. Read Dr. Pam Smith's book about women's hormones. And you also probably need testosterone and DHEA, which is an adrenal hormone, testosterone precursor. But yeah, I certainly do. I'm 60 years old. I'm almost 69 years old. But of course, I'm going to take hormone therapy. That's not over the hill. 60 years is young these days. So, and hormone therapy will help keep you younger, from your brain to your bones to your muscles. That's why you need the testosterone and just your general sense of energy. And at least you're taking a bioidentical, that is a bioidentical hormone, your estradiol. So that's good. You know, you're not on an oral estrogen, which I don't like, because it could affect your clotting factors and maybe increase your risk of gallstones, oral estrogen. So I prefer the creams, patches, or pellets. But that's a great question. Hysterectomy at 43, and I'm assuming they total, so they took out your ovaries. Good. You know, anybody mid-40s or on, if you have to have a hysterectomy, make sure they take your ovaries out too, because you don't have that much life in them anyway, and you nix your chance of ovarian cancer. I had a lady a couple years ago that had hysterectomy, I think at age 45 or 46, for benign fibroids, and they decided to leave the ovaries in. And actually, it was the patient that wanted that, and now she has ovarian cancer. So you really just wish they had taken everything out and had accomplished hormone replacement therapy. So get your levels checked. Think about adding the other hormones that you still need in addition to the estrogen only, in my opinion. So,
Kim, thank you so much for that question. You know, as most of you probably know, it's October is World Menopause Awareness Month. And, you know, one of our big messages is let's get menopause out of the shadows and treat menopause. So thank you, Kim, for putting that in there. Great question, and something I hope we'll talk more about all month long, and really we're going to be talking about all year long. Okay, let's get to Jack here on YouTube. I've been on keto for quite a while. Is it a good idea to take a break from it time to time? It's a great question, Jack.
That's a very good question. And, you know, in reading a lot about keto, a lot of times keto is a great place to get where you want to go. However, a lot of people just can't stay on it. There's too many carbs around. They start craving them. So, you know, what I think probably you ought to do, especially if you exercise a lot, you probably ought to work a few carbs in, low glycemic carbs. And I think, you don't require any carbs. You could live on zero carbs. You have to have fat and protein, but you could live without any carbs. But a lot of people have a hard time doing that. Not many people can stay on keto. So I would say when keto has accomplished its goal, either it for weight loss, for cancer prevention or protocol for treatment, then you can, ease some good carbs in there. You may find yourself more energetic. So either you can cycle on them a little while, or you can, just permanently put a few carbs in there. So I think that's a great question. And if you read a lot of the heavy hitters that talk a lot about this, like Atiyah and some of those others, I forget the last guy I was reading. Even some of the carnivore guys, I mean, they're working some carbs in as well. So I don't think it's a bad idea at all for you to do that.
Almost like keto as a detox in a way. Thank you, Jack, for putting that in there. It's a great question. Let's get to my man Dave on Facebook. Are there any other herbs you might add to a curcumin black pepper mix for neuropathy and arthritic pain relief?
Well, that's a good one. You don't believe this, but I ordered something today that I'll give you some feedback on that a patient actually told me about it. And it's a bunch of herbs that I'd never even heard about. So I'm going to try it. And if it works for me, I'm going to definitely tell people about it and see how. Well, I would never use something on somebody else that I wouldn't be willing to take myself. But certainly curcumin and black pepper are the ones that are the mainstay. Now you can add in MSM, which I like, glucosamine. Chondroitin hasn't been shown to do a lot. Glucosamine maybe. But there's a lot of others that a lot of the essential oils are good too. And one of the main things I tell people is to stay away from sugars. I mean, it's just incredible what a clean diet can do for you. Neuropathy, B6, I like for neuropathies. You know, a lot of it depends on what's causing neuropathy. Is it from your back? Is it diabetic? Is it idiopathic, meaning we don't know what caused it? But you might try a little bit of B6 as well. But stay tuned for that. You know, one of my quests is to find something that will help people that get around my age that hurt a lot. They're very stiff. They hurt. All of us at my age have a little osteoarthritis.
And I'll just give a little behind the curtains here. I got about, Dad always sends me articles that he's reading, and I got like 10 in a row on, I think it was Saturday, and they are around what he's kind of hinting at tonight with the arthritic pain relief. So
stay tuned on that one. I'm on a quest for that.
Because, he is. He truly is.
I'm on a real quest because most people that come in to see me, either they're tired or they hurt.
Yeah.
And you know. So I see so many people my age that, you know, we're all playing pickleball now. And if you play 2 hours of pickleball with good players, I mean, the next day you are really going to be sore. I mean, even a guy like Ben is going to be sore.
Yeah.
Am I not right?
No, for sure. For sure. I get really sore. And, you know, I think we all could benefit from things that, you know, as we get older, just the recovery time is so much longer. But as we, I'm going to kind of bookmark this. So we'll get back to what you're kind of hinting
at. Yeah. And, you know, for people that really have severe problems with it, you know, I'm definitely going to come up with a protocol. And believe it or not, it may even include very low dose prednisone chronically and maybe LDN with it. So I'm coming up with something that I think, because a lot of people are just miserable. They don't want to take pain medicines. And I won't put them on pain medicines for that. And, you know, nonsteroidals a lot of times quit working. They can hurt your stomach. They can affect your kidneys. But, you know, with any of this stuff, you have to look at your, you know, your blood work occasionally to look at and see. But if Katie's still on there, that stuff I ordered, you may, if you can remember the name of it, you know, we'll flip it up there. But I'm definitely going to try it and see how it works on me. I've had a lot of people that tell me this pain factor works. You know, I know there's a lot of herbs in that, including curcumin, black pepper, and all that. But we'll see. Just stay tuned for that one.
Stay tuned for that, guys. We're going to give you more information on that. And real quick, we're going to take a last question here from Evangeline. Follow-up question. The question that that was asked about heart health and testosterone. What about the effects on homocysteine levels?
You know, I haven't seen it affect homocysteine levels. I certainly check homocysteine levels on our Clevelands and look at that. Mine was high. You know, the main thing with homocysteine is the people that are affected usually have a methylation defect in the MTHFR gene. I certainly have the double mutation 677TT, which is the bad one, which increases. It all has to do with that methionine homocysteine cycling. You know, homocysteine, you don't want it to build up because it's an inflammatory agent. So it usually means you're going to need methylated B vitamins. So I really haven't, and maybe trimethylglycine. That's another really good thing you can do to get the homocysteine level down. You know, glycine is a very helpful supplement. But no, certainly we always keep an eye on homocysteine levels, but I haven't specifically seen it pop it up that much. It's usually due to the other causes. But, you know, if your experience says that when you just start taking testosterone, it went up without any other factors, it'd be interesting to kind of do a study on that and see. But
Evangeline, thank you so much for putting that in there. It's a great observation there. And I see Roel's comment there. Yes, we will most definitely. This is something that's so important. Can you please make a video on balance for older folks? So important. We'll definitely be doing that.
I think we did one on that with Ernie at one point. You know,
it's
our physical therapist.
It's been a while, though.
But yeah, so important.
Yeah,
that's very important. You know, one of my things with people as they get older is to work on balance and to see if they can get out of the floor without using their arms and hands. That's something you probably should be able to do.
Let's get this one last question in. Is there any alternative treatments for PCOS? Thank you so much for putting this in there. We talk a lot about PCOS. Anything come to mind with this question, Doc?
Yeah, you know, you can use berberine for it. We talked about berberine today. PCOS is usually an insulin resistance problem. So I do like berberine for that. And sometimes I use other things, of course, like spironolactone, metformin, which are both prescription medicines. But, you know, very low carb diet and, you know, avoiding any androgenic type precursors like DHEA in cases like this. But diet is big. But I'd say as far as the non-prescription medicines, berberine, you know, maybe you know, and check the levels of everything. But there's, I also use a lot of Ozempic for it. Sometimes you're going to, need more treatment than just the alternative stuff. Like I say, I'm a blend between traditional alternative. I use the best of both. So,
man, I tell you what, these questions tonight have been phenomenal. Thank you guys. As always, y'all make this show great. Doc, I want to make sure you're able to get your bike ride in tonight. And, I think we're going to get the dogs, to send us off. I see Jack is saying time for the pups. As Jack knows, we end the show with,
come here
with Izzy and Ike.
Where are the pups? Come here, Izzy. Yeah, come here, Ike. Come here.
Thanks guys for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.